Okay, you're very welcome back to the last hour of the 9 till noon show. And as you would know, hundreds of business owners and workers from the hospitality industry, tourism industry, retail and other sectors are taking part in a protest in Dublin today. They're en route, as is Alice Lynch, owner of Maggie's Tavern St. Johnston. Hi, Alice. Good morning to you.
Hi, Greg. Great to be here and great to be on as well. We're on our way to Dublin here. Publicans from all over the county, from North Donegal right down to the Bonnie Glen and Glantys. We're all over the place. In Letterkenny, Ballybuffet. We're all on our way down to Dublin.
What message do you want to get across? Because, you know, Maggie's Tavern, really successful business in St. Johnston. That's the perception, right? But I presume behind the scenes, it's a constant struggle to keep businesses open.
Well, it's the fact that the VAT went up 50%. And that has impacted on our own customers, the customers that come into the pub for their dinner or their drinks or whatever. It's the PRSI. It's all of the suites. It's like turning on the light. It's the music. It's the electricity. It's the energy. It's all the hidden costs that have been gradually been hitting the businesses. And the only thing is, I use the word gradually wrongly. They're hitting them all at the one time. So it's the cost of doing business is massive. It's just massive.
And I presume you would feel, as many others would feel, that the budget 25 was a missed opportunity.
Absolutely. The budget was not for business. It definitely wasn't for business. We just wanted a bit of help with the VAT, the PRSI, giving back to the customers what we want to do. Give back to the customer. But the government doesn't see how dire straits that we are in at the moment. It's very difficult. Yes, we are smiling. Yes, we are getting on going. But I want to give more value to my customer, as does the restaurants and the publicans all around the area. They want to give back more, but it's getting so difficult for the cost of doing business. The product coming in, just to give you one example, Greg, before COVID, my kilo of goujons was £3.40, €3.40. Today, that same kilo is £11.80.
Wow.
Like they have to help us. Mm. They have to see about the cost. It's the cost of the products coming in that is so high.
But it's also too, you know, there's things outside of the government's control, but some government policy decisions business owners feel could have been offset in some way or other. Increases in the national minimum wage, paid statutory sick days, plans to increase the minimum wage and what have you. But the bottom line is even with a lower VAT rate, presumably, if the footfall increases, you know, if people continue to go out or even go out more because it's, you know, remains affordable, then the take will remain the same or increase even perhaps. But if it gets to the point where people cannot afford to go out, or indeed people can't afford to do business, then there's no VAT. There's 13.5% of nothing is nothing.
Absolutely. Regarding the minimum wage, it's just that everything has happened so quickly. It's just over a window there of a couple of years. We've just got out of COVID and they've just put in increases all the time. Yes, there's sick benefits, but the things that are coming down the line, they're not addressing that to us. Yes, everything is lovely in the outside, but when it comes down to reality, when there's nobody coming into the bars, the restaurants and the hotels, who's going to pay the wages? Is it just going to be back in the dole queue? We don't want that. We want to work with the government, but they're ignoring us at the moment. Mm-hmm. And we want to sit down at the table. We want to work. We want to keep busy. We want to employ people. And we want, obviously, to pay them well as well, because that is the customer coming back into us. But the government has to see the point of talking to us, saying about the overheads that you don't see. You don't see the music, the MRO increasing. You don't see the electricity increasing. The customer doesn't see that, but we see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we want to just chat to the government.
Okay.
Tell them the way it is. Mm. Let them know the way it is.
Alice, who else is with you there?
Yes. Okay. I have Sean Kennedy.
I might have a quick chat to Sean if you don't mind.
Yes. A young publican. Okay. I'm the old one today. So this is young Sean Kennedy.
Okay. Sean Kennedy of the Thatch in Glentie. Sean, you recently reopened the Thatch. Is that correct?
Or have a couple? Indeed. Yeah. Back in July there.
All right.
93 months. Yeah.
And what have you found? What have you found, Sean?
Well, from my perspective, Greg, like, I've kind of been involved with hospitality since 17. Like, very fortunate mom and dad, like, did the Harbour Restaurant, Donegal Town, got involved there at an early age. Now, all my dad and uncle over in the Thatch Barn Restaurant in Glentie's. And it's just, things have really changed in the industry since COVID. Like, you know, the cost of everything has, like, Alice has summed it up there perfectly. It's gone through the roof since 2019. Yes, COVID happened. We got a decent support package from the government, but this is unprecedented now, what's happening. Like, everything, energy, everything's gone through the roof. And like me, from a young kind of age perspective, you know, see my mum and dad's been in it for years. You have Joe, Rorty, and everyone here, seasoned professionals. I think the general consensus now is that, like, we're at a crossroads in the industry. And, you know, it's like a burned out feeling. It's anxiety, it's stress. It's with, you know, the bills are coming in, they're getting worse and worse. You know, we're renowned in Ireland for having such a good tourism industry, and it's been such a fabric of our country for years. But there, for instance, too, Donegal voted very great award accolade for coolest place in the world recently. Sure, what good is that if restaurants are closing down week after week, and, you know, you don't have in your rural communities that pub where you can go for a good pint, a good chat, or a restaurant? Like, McLean's there last week, and our well-established restaurant, trading really well for 6 years. They're closed. It's just a raft of closures at the moment.
And I'll tell you what, also we have to factor in, for instance, the likes of Glentie's. You know, it's a lovely, beautiful, vibrant town, year after year after year, named one of the best-kept towns in Ireland. But it needs businesses like the Thatch as you head in to it there. That's the life 100%. And blood of a town. So it's somewhere for tourists to go, for locals to go. Yeah. But also, there's not a ton of employment opportunities, so it keeps people in employment, which pays, you know, mortgages, rent, pays bills, and they rely on you. And there's also a point, I presume, Sean, you can't increase the pint every time. You can't increase whatever food offering there might be. You have to absorb these increases we're talking about because the customers simply won't take it.
Yep, 100%. And, like, you know, don't get me wrong, Greg, like, you know, see the wage increase and all. That's great to see. You know, the cost of living in this country at the minute, you need the minimum wage to be going up, you know, for the ones in college and all that. And, but for us as a business, it's very hard to absorb at the minute. Like, between the two businesses, I think we have nearly 50 employees.
Wow.
If you factor in 50 employees are going up 80 cents per hour, and let's just say that's 50 employees, well, 50 to 60 by 80 cents, and you're saying, you know, ranging from part-time to full-time.
When you start adding that up over a course of it,
that's about 1,000 euro extra a week.
Yeah, okay, it's
big, you know, and we have a mantra in the Thatch and Harbour. We love giving our staff increases. If they do work hard and all, we love to reward them. But there's a certain point here where we're going to have to look at maybe reducing our staff to, you know, to cope with this increase, because the minimum wage is going up to 250, I think, in the last year and a half. And that's great because cost of living's crazy at the minute. But for a business, if we're not getting the right support measures from the governments, we're going to struggle to give to meet that. And, you know, we want to put people through college. Right. We want to help their parents to help put people through college. But there has to be a balance here for the business.
Yeah. And it's not just people working in retail too, they're seeing their hours being cut. They still have their job, but instead of the 39, all of a sudden it's 28. Who else is with you there? I'm not sure who's on a different line or who's there.
Megan here from Biddy's.
Oh, lovely stuff. Megan Slevin, co-owner of beautiful Biddy O'Barnes. You're on the way to that protest as well. Again, another hugely successful, hugely popular business, but that doesn't butter the parsnips either. You know, you have to be able to make it worthwhile, because there's a lot of pressure and stress in this industry, right? And you don't want to be just constantly working to keep your head above water. It has to be viable or we lose businesses, Megan.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. 100%. Like, I have two small kids at home. Our head chefs have small kids, yet we work 7 days a week, all sorts of hours, crazy hours. And we're not the only ones in hospitality. You know, everybody has families, they have lives, and they work 7 days a week. They work Sundays, they work Christmas days. So, you know, hospitality workers are some of the hardest workers out there, and it needs to be viable. It needs to be a viable business so that we can do the minimum, so that we can raise wages, so that we can expand our businesses, so that we can have economic growth and development for our businesses, but for Donegal, for the community. We need to make money so that we can, you know, we're the first place that people come to when the GAA club or the soccer needs a new field and they want sponsorship. And we want to be happy to do that. We want to be happy to support our communities, but we need to be able to afford to do that.
What helps though, Megan, because, you know, some of the businesses supports, and I've spoken to business people, firstly, you have to front load yourself and cash flow can be an issue. Secondly, you have to be completely rates compliant, and often people fall behind. They have payment plans with the council. They're writing down the debt, or they're reducing the debt, but they still would be statistically in arrears and can't avail of some of these government measures. And those are those that probably need them the most. So it must feel like a horrible catch 22 for some of them. But what is the difference maker? Would a 9% VAT rate, how significant would that be in the survival of business? Or does there need to be more than that?
I would have liked to say if they brought in this measure a few years ago that, you know, from a cash flow perspective, that the 9% would have done the job. But with everything that businesses have suffered since COVID, including, you know, loss of employees just from the hospitality industry as a whole, having to train up new employees, you know, all the price increases from private suppliers, from food costs, drink costs, so on, rates, insurance, like I could go on, everybody does. But I don't think the 9% is, it's not the silver bullet in this case. I think it would have been a nice nod from the government to do for the hospitality industry. We would have felt like they understood our concerns and that they value the, that they value what the hospitality industry brings to the tourism industry and to the economic development of Ireland. Like, there's over 270,000 employees employed in this sector. It's a very key sector. Small businesses, I think, make up 60% of businesses across Ireland. So, like, you know, we hospitality businesses hit a lot of those marks, and we just don't feel like they really valued that, and they really value us. They don't value our employees.
And the businesses are still there when the grants run out, our small and medium, incredibly important. And you know, there are questions that need to be asked. Why do we have some of the highest electricity rates in Europe? Why do we have one of the highest, well above the average of VAT rate? You know, why is the, especially when the country has an abundance of money, that's what we're being told, right? So is Chris Noble there, or is he on a different line from number nine? Is Chris there? Chris, is Chris there? No, he's
Sorry,
not.
Chris.
It's okay. Is Chris
Sorry.
There?
Hello.
Hey, Chris, how are you getting on, buddy? You're from number nine in Letterkenny, and I suppose we're kind of we're kind of reiterating a lot of what we've already said, but yours is another young fledgling business. Do you know what I mean? With all the hopes and dreams that any small new business might have. Wonderful product, hugely successful already, but stepping straight into a difficult trading environment.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely stressful. We only opened about 7 months ago, and the prices of everything are already really high. Like, it's hard to do it.
Yeah, so you're going to go down there, you're going to join with the others and push for some of these measures. Listen, unfortunately, I could only afford a quick word with you because I do have to move on, but I do appreciate your time greatly. Thank you so very much indeed. So that was, you heard there from Chris Noble, number nine in Letterkenny, Sean Kennedy of the Thatch in Glenties, Megan Slevin, the co-owner of Biddy O'Barnes, and also, firstly, and foremost, let's just say for today, Alice Lynch, owner of Maggie's Tavern St. Johnson, all different types of businesses from right across different parts of the county, all talking about the difficulty of keeping their doors open. There's a window of opportunity here. I think there's a window of opportunity if the government wants to, and if the public want the government to want to. It's not up to me. I'm not a legislator. But there is a window of opportunity here maybe to introduce measures that might help businesses survive. But we could be heading into a right old dip, you know, in this country. We have to be really, really careful. A couple of comments before the break. Mary T on Facebook. Sorry, I'll start up here with Teresa. If this is on YouTube. If my neighbour talked about this stuff to my child, I'd phone the guards. What is the difference in schools? Teachers are grooming the children. Absolutely sick. No child protection. I agree, Teresa. You would never accept that. what I'm trying to make sure is that this is a nuanced conversation, and I'm getting a lot of flack for it. I don't really mind. What I'm trying to make sure is whatever we do is the right thing. So say, for instance, we're too liberal at the moment, and that's damaging to kids. Let's just say that that's where we're at. What I think we have to make sure is that we don't all of a sudden become too conservative, and that, even though it's well-intended, is damaging to children. Because, Teresa, what if your neighbour started saying things to your children that all children do this? You have to be, this is what children do. Don't tell mum and dad now, but I've many children that such and such a stuff happened, but it's our little secret. Don't tell mum and dad, don't tell anyone in school. What if your neighbour said that? What would they have the information to protect themselves? Maybe in your house, would every child? That's just the question I'm asking. Mary T says, as a mother of, this is Mary T McConnell, as a mother of four older children, I do think most young teens know this info, whether we want to believe it or not. My generation was definitely more innocent, but things have changed. You can contact the school if you're worried. Francis says, not every child has the safe and loving environment that lady is portraying. There's vulnerable children out there that need guidance that may not get it from the parents. Children or kids are not as innocent as we were as children. They're exposed to far more worse on the internet. I watched or read an article about, I don't know what age they were. Like, they weren't teenagers, but like 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old girls dancing on TikTok, following trends. The article outlined what they were, the way we're doing. You could argue it was really quite provocative. But so that's happening, right? Lots of 9, 10, 11-year-old girls, and boys probably, but this article was about girls, are doing this stuff. And there was a study done on the favouriting of the video, so a person can favourite it so that they can access it whenever they like. Some of these videos of innocent 9, 10, 11-year-old girls, their videos were being favourited 4, 5,000 times by people. You know, figure out who that is. In their innocence in their bedroom, but these people were favouring it, and you can only imagine why they might be doing that and downloading these videos. Your regular video, I have videos up on TikTok that have loads of views. I can tell you right now, no more than 10 people have favourited it. But some of these videos of these young girls favourited 4, 5, 6,000 times. Who's doing that? Why are they doing that? Again, I don't know what the, I have a fair idea what the answer is, but what do we know as parents know about that, and what are we doing to protect the children? That's got nothing to do with school. That's what's happening in our homes. That's what I'm worried about. Josephine says, I'm disgusted at the way Greg kept interrupting Rebecca during such an important topic. Wouldn't even let her finish in sentence. Angry face. Deirdre then says, replying to Josephine, exactly, very arrogant and constantly interrupting. I can tell you there's a lot of things I am. But one of them isn't arrogant. But I do appreciate your feedback nonetheless. Right, we do have to take a break. Loads more of your comments on that very important issue. That's why we're talking about it. There's no point in us all fighting amongst ourselves and getting angry at me. Or at least we're having the conversation, right? We're trying to get to the bottom of what's best for our children. So I don't mind you getting angry at me, but what does that achieve? Isn't it far better that it not being talked about and speculated about in other platforms? At least we're having the conversation. All right, Kian's with us. Sorry for holding you there, Kian. You are very much of the opinion that Rory Gallagher's strat needs to stay in Ireland.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Good. Yeah, good. Thanks, Kian.
Absolutely. I think I agree with everything that Barry O'Neill said when he was on with you earlier. I think, like, it's such a hugely significant piece of Irish history and culture, and like, Ireland is known worldwide for the quality of the music that it is produced, in spite of like the size of the country and the population. And Rory Gallagher is a real symbol of Irish the quality of the music, and like his listenership it's worldwide. Like, his reach and his legacy, it reaches all over the world. Like, he's got like maybe 500,000 at least monthly listeners on Spotify, mm-hmm. and if you travel to any of the festivals, namely locally the Rory Gallagher Festival in Ballyshannon, there are tens of thousands of people in attendance from all over the world, and I think to let the guitar go and potentially leave the country and go into private ownership, I think it'd be a real shame.
Do you think it would be short-sighted to focus too much on the money, Keane? Because obviously, you know, public spending's a big issue at the moment. But in terms of the cultural value, the artistic value and I suppose the return on it with footfall and what have you. Do you think that we should avoid looking at the short term big cost? Let's not let it could go for less than 700,000. But do you think it would be short-sighted to think too much about the initial outlay and maybe think more of its cultural value, the long-term value?
Yeah, I agree with you entirely there. I think like it's as important as maybe some of the a lot of other pieces of history that are currently maybe on display in museums. And I think anyone that travels to Ireland, you know, they're enthralled by the music culture and the way that like musicians connect together, whether it's whether it's local gigs and pubs or whether it's trad sessions or music at family events or weddings or funerals. It's just such a an integral part of the culture. And then Rory Gallagher's Stratocaster is just a symbol of that. And it's it'd make no sense to let it leave the country, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think we still struggle to celebrate and be proud of our culture. I don't know if it's because of our history or what have you, but I mean, I can imagine the stink if some very important Beatles memorabilia was heading to Russia. There'd be uproar and no one would mind in England how much was paid for it, I would say, or something synonymous with Elvis Presley was heading to China. You know, they would probably have no guilt or shame in saying, no, this is our culture. This is important to us. We should retain it. Here, we still struggle a little bit, I think, in that regard to sort of celebrate, you know, our Irishness and what it means to be Irish and things that are important to Ireland.
Yeah, like I'm totally surprised that it's actually made it to auction, to be honest with
me
you.
Me too, yeah.
Because, I think it's been auctioned by a house called Bonhams in London, and I think the guide price is maybe 700 to £1 million, but when you look at the significance and the history associated with that specific guitar, it's priceless to Ireland. You know, you can't really put a price on. I think it's totally priceless.
All right, Keane, great stuff. Really appreciate it. Yeah. Well-formed argument. Take care of yourself. That's key in there. Very much of the view the Gallagher Strat should stay in Ireland. What's your view? And you have been expressing your views in your hundreds. A caller says, and these quite literally are just as they're piled here. I have no idea what they say. I'm just going to read them. I don't see them in advance and none are binned. They're all just put through. Information is key for young children to have. Schools are right by giving information to kids. We can't have any secrecy regarding sex education. I agree with what Greg was saying. We need to be able to talk about sex. It's no wonder the government is spending 9 million euros on keeping mobile phones out of schools. This is to stop the children to record what's actually going on, which is quite the claim. This lady talking to Greg on the contents of books are totally inappropriate for young teenagers. Teenagers have been given too much scope without consultation with parents. The WHO agenda is to sexualize children younger and younger. And this consent topic is only there so that once a child thinks it's okay and gives consent, the predator is free to do what they want. It's disgusting that they're trying to take away children's innocence. People should read the WHO document. Again, like I'm just want to make sure that we have the conversation as adults who are responsible here and don't return to where we were in the past, where it seems almost every child at some extent or other was open to being abused under the, for whatever reasons it was. Would have been nice to hear Rebecca talk and let her explain all without interruptions from Greg. May as well not have her on speaking. It is a conversation. It's an interview. It's not that's the nature of it. It's the same with everything. Very well told, Rebecca. Why so many books for one subject and the sly way to do things as usual? We have someone on talking about the curriculum where I'll get clarification on those books tomorrow for you, by the way. Gender identity is being taught as fact. Unproven ideology should be included as discussions and debate only. At the moment, anyone who disagrees is disrespected and called a transphobe. We need safe changing areas for girls and women and safety and fairness in sport, which is part of the same space, but I think a different space where more people might have difficulty with that and the fact that it opens up children to other stuff. From what I've been reading for years, not this scandal now coming to light, the NGOs, the WHO, are trying to destroy their innocence. If an adult outside of school spoke to my child about this, I would phone the guards immediately. Why are the schools allowed to teach this filth? It seems to me the authors of these books are grooming children. Teachers will be held accountable for this. Well, listen, I don't think that language helps, because then you could get someone that says, I think other adults want all this stuff covered up so they can do bad things to children. That's completely wrong. And to suggest that I think that they're trying to open this up to groom children's the counterpoint, that's completely wrong. That's not going to help us if we argue with each other like that, because you could make the argument from both sides. And where's the child protection there? Right, loads more coming in on that. If you haven't heard your comment, you probably will before the end of the show. But we're going on to Kathleen Murray now, owner of Doggy Do's and Don'ts. Good morning to you, Kathleen. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
Great to speak to you. We heard from the Dogs Trust Ireland. They did a study, I think, which put some flesh on the bones of how scary it is for dogs around about Halloween, particularly because of their hearing so much more sensitive than our own, Kathleen.
Yes, they can hear an awful lot more than we can, and higher pitches as well. So they'll hear fireworks when we don't hear them. So if they become alert and start to look around or run to a window or start to bark, and you can't hear anything, it doesn't mean that they can't hear anything, because they can hear things much higher frequency, as I say, and much further away than we can. So it is a pretty scary time for them.
Yeah, and it's
again,
not,
it's that time of the year.
Yeah,
it's just that time of the year where everybody likes it.
I beg your pardon, Kathleen. Sorry. It's also too, we may focus on the fireworks, and that's understandable. For many people listening to the show, they won't hear a single firework, but they will get people knocking at the doors. There'll be extra treats in the house and that type of stuff, which we as humans can easily adapt. But for some dogs, that can be a bit of an issue. So in terms of, you know, people dressed up, not appearing as human necessarily, and fireworks, any advice for listeners, dog owners?
Yeah, well, advice for people knocking on doors, for a start, if you know there's a dog in the house, be careful when you knock at the door. And for the dog owners, you know, take responsibility as well, because most dogs will rush to the door whenever the owner goes to the door, and they'll bark and they'll be all hyped up and excited, thinking maybe it's a visitor, maybe it's somebody they know. And then when they realise that it's not, then things can change very quickly. So, you know, make sure that the dog is under control, it's on a lead, or have it in another room when you go to open the door, especially at Halloween, because accidents do happen. Dogs shoot out past owners, they're gone down the road, you know, they're in traffic, they're lost, they're away from home, and not a serious amount of them are not microchipped, which I can't understand because it's a legal requirement. And then they're lost, and then nobody knows what to do then. They don't know where to go looking for them. The poor dog is out now in the open where the fireworks can be heard, and they don't know, they're hiding under hedges and things. And
running,
it's a very
roads.
Scary time all around. Yeah, that's right. And traffic are in danger as well then, because they have to swerve to avoid them, you know.
Yeah, there might be stuff in the house that's not ordinarily there, whether it's for your own family or for trick-or-treaters to presumably keep human treats out of the way of inquisitive dogs and any animals, actually, for that matter. But we're focusing on the dogs today.
Yeah, exactly, because there's lots of treats, and there's barn bracks and things with raisins in them, which are not good for dogs. You know, there's chocolates. People get in little boxes of celebrations or whatever kind of chocolates that they like themselves, and to hand out maybe to some children or things. And, you know, if the dog gets into that, it's definitely not good for the dog. So you don't want to cause more problems than are already there. So, you know, just be mindful of those things. You know, and as I say, just be careful, especially around the door, because that's where a lot of dogs escape, and that's where a lot of accidents happen, or people might get bitten or whatever. So if you have a dog, put it away before you open the door, or close the door, at least between you and the door that you're going to open, so it makes it safe for everybody, really.
All right. Now, obviously, lots of humans will be dressing up, but nowadays you can get all manner of costumes for your dogs between Temu and elsewhere. Do you have a view on whether or not it's okay to stick a pumpkin on your dog?
Well, I've seen worse stuck on them. It's a personal choice, really. Yeah. I mean, most dogs don't tolerate things like that well. They're not that excited about it. It's the human that's excited about it, not the dog, really. A lot of them are just torture. Lots of dogs will just bite them and eat them off, you know, because there's lots of dogs, if they go to the vet and they get on a bandage, the owner can't keep it on because the dog has it ripped off, like within minutes again. So dogs don't tend to tolerate stuff like that stuck to them. Some dogs do, some dogs don't. I mean, dogs can get used to a coat and things on them in the wintertime, because it's not hampering them in any way. But for things that hang over their heads or go around their faces or things like that, they just don't like stuff
does
like that.
Does a dog need does a dog need a Burberry coat for winter, or is that just something we do to entertain ourselves?
I don't know about a Burberry coat now, but they definitely some dogs are kept indoors. They're on the sofa 24/7. You know, they go out into the cold. They're coming out of a central heating environment. A lot of them are small and they're shaved a lot over the winter to be easily kept. You know, they can get cold. So, but if you've got a big dog with a double coat, they don't need it.
Okay.
But for small dogs, sometimes they do. Or dogs with a very thin coat, like believe it or not, a Dalmatian has a very thin coat.
Right.
And they're one of the dogs that could be doing with a coat in the winter time because they can't do well in the cold weather by themselves.
All right, now whether or not they're dressed up or not, mums and dads will be getting them. Please, can I bring Greg out for a walk for when we're doing the trick and treating? Please, you know what I mean. Is there any problem with that? Taking your dog out trick or treating on the lead.
Well, if your dog is on a lead and it's under control and it's a fairly friendly, happy-go-lucky dog, that's fine. But if you bring out a dog that's not socialised, that's not used to things like that, they could shy back from somebody at the door, somebody could put down their hand to offer the dog something and they could get bitten. So, you know, especially where children are involved, because there's a lot of excitement involved, and where there's excitement between children and dogs, there can be an accident. So just be mindful of things like that. I wouldn't advise taking the dog out, but if you're keeping the dog back from the door, or if an adult is in charge of the dog, then that's okay, especially if it's a dog that you can pick up and put under your arm. If it's a bigger dog, then you need to have somebody there that can manage that dog.
All right, and I suppose too, I think if I had a dog and I knew trick-or-treaters were coming or there's going to be trick-or-treat stuff around the house, just make sure their belly's full before all that activity starts.
Oh yeah, definitely. Have your dog fed before you head out, and that's good. Also, dogs pick up habits very quickly. So if they go to a door and somebody hands them a dog treat, or some other kind of a treat, and then they go to the next door and they get the same, because people love dogs, like, you know, and most people love dogs, then the dog is going to be like raring to go at the next door, at the third door, and might start jumping up and scraping at the door in anticipation or excitement of the next treat coming.
Yeah,
you need to have a well-behaved dog out with you so you're not going to get into trouble or get people given out to you.
And completely unrelated, I don't know if this dog's got an identity crisis or not, but the caller says, my dog would rather eat cat food than dog food. Is that bad?
It's not so much that it's bad, but, you know, dog food is dog food and cat food is cat food. There are certain things in cat food that cats really need that dogs don't actually need, that can be done without. But if you're concerned about your dog's diet or that, you just ring the vet and ask what's the best thing to feed the cat. I mean, lots of dogs steal the cat food. Hedgehogs eat cat food. And things, but it's not good to let them do it in general. They need their own nutrients as well. So dog food is dog food. So, you know, or our food, you know, if we eat a normal dinner or whatever, then the dog can also have that, because that's actually really good nutrition, as long as there's nothing in it that the dog can't digest or will make the dog sick.
All right, great stuff. Nice bit of advice ahead of Halloween. Kathleen, thanks so much for your time. Take care. Kathleen Murray, owner of Doggy and Do's, Doggy Do's and Don'ts. Greg, I'm glad you had this lady on today. However, I wish you would not rush this very important subject. This show's listener driven, and it's obviously something that we have to return to because it's had such a response. We can't know everything in advance. They go on to talk about other stuff that we talk about. I'll read it all, because again, when people are passionate, they get very sensitive about interviewing techniques. This is a very important subject. Spent hours and days on the defective blocks and other topics that affect families. But please let this lady get all the info out without interrupting or giving your interpretation. The WHO document was actually very important to talk about because all of this is stemming from there. Okay, listen, we'll talk about that down the line. I have a responsibility also as well. And just what I wanted to keep Rebecca on, and she did, and that's fine, is stuff that's in the schools right now or coming down, or definitely coming down the line, because we need to focus on that. Rather than, you know, other stuff. But anyway, I was listening to Greg and Rebecca. I want to congratulate Rebecca from the bottom of my heart. She showcased the truth. I think that Rebecca would make a great presenter. It's not age appropriate. It's actually encouraging normal, inquisitive children to try this out. Again, unfortunately, if there weren't hundreds and thousands of young teenagers being abused, and if we weren't putting 12, 13, 14 and 15-year-old girls on the pill, and if And this is unfortunately happening, I read an article on it recently, if 14 and 15-year-old boys weren't putting their hands around girls' necks at the same age because they've seen it on the internet. But the horse has bolted in terms of protecting their innocence. We could do that ourselves within our own homes, but there's an awful lot of children don't have homes that do that. Again, I don't know what the right answer is, just opening up the conversation. Greg, I hope parents go to the school and let the teachers know that this ideology isn't acceptable, full stop, and Miss Foley should resign, not now. Now, not tomorrow. I'm surprised Greg isn't aware of Stay Safe, which is in primary schools. He's muddying the water regarding explicit sex education, which is value-free and not intended to protect against abuse. I'd be disgusted if I thought my 13-year-old was learning about anal sex in school or being told that it exists, is what's happening. I wasn't aware of this and will be contacting my school for more information. Learning that will not educate them on sexual abuse, but it may influence children to explore things their minds are not ready for. Well done to Rebecca for making people aware of this. Greg, I wouldn't like my children or grandchildren to be taught this explicit sex education by teachers or other transgenders. Well, not going to be taught. Coming to school to teach, so they think transgender people are coming into school to teach sex education. Greg, please stop interrupting. Another, our school has made it clear that if parents don't want their children to take part in these classes, that they can opt out of them. That's in our primary school and secondary school. I think children need to know proper terms, especially if there is abuse, as these proper terms are needed if Gardaí are involved. Not every child has a safe upbringing, and kids need to know what's right and what's wrong. All children need to be protected. What year is this group living in? Children and teenagers have full internet access today and can Google faster any part of the body or any sexual act quicker than you can say Google. Most of the TV shows have all this in it. Education is the key to knowledge. Give the children the knowledge and teach them the morals of the behaviour of what's acceptable and what is not. Just in relation to that, like, it's that in case of swear words, you know, I could never protect the I could never protect kids from swearing, and I presume they swear amongst their own friends and what have you. You can never protect them from swearing, but that they know the words and when it's appropriate or not to use them. Well, Don, Greg, I give out to you a lot, but today you spoke a lot of common sense. Greg, give Rebecca time to answer you. Keep butting in every time she tries to answer your questions. I have 18 minutes to get as much out as is absolutely possible. That's just the way it is. There are loads of other platforms like YouTube or Facebook where you can sit and chat uninterrupted for an hour or two. Or there's other radio shows, I suppose, down the country that are online where the presenter is of one point of view and can indulge whatever point of view that is for 2 hours. That's fine. Unfortunately, we've got different people listening with different points of views and we've a short amount of time and it's trying to get as much out there as possible. Greg is making a distinction without a difference regarding the WHO. This agenda, once set out, will inevitably begin to trickle down and is absolutely relevant to Ireland. Until or unless an Irish government makes a stand, that will not be following WHO recommendations. I don't disagree with you in relation to that, but we'd had the WHO conversation from 2019, 2020 and on. Rebecca was in to talk specifically about what's being taught in schools now, but maybe more time should have been spent on the WHO. I'm an open-minded adult. I've seen the first 15 minutes of the video with the whistleblower. I couldn't watch it any further. If parents knew what was being taught to our children, they wouldn't let it happen. Now, that video, just to be clear, I'm not one side or other, genuine. I just want to be... That video was her interpretation of a class given to teachers, not to children. Now, whether that would trickle down to children, I don't know, but that video was about a class that she was in DCU. There are a lot of parents who won't contact schools regarding sex ed. Lots of parents leave everything to the schools, and if anything goes wrong, it's seen as the school's fault. In an ideal world, parents would take part in their child's education, but unfortunately many children don't have parents in their lives that do stuff like that. There seems to be a minority agenda to sexualise our children, some of who are still writing to Santa. Of course, why wouldn't you write to Santa? Your kids should be taught about sex, but it must be age appropriate. Teaching youngsters about anal and oral and pornography seems to have a sinister aim. So in that book, in On Consent for 14, 13, 4-year-olds, it described three types of sex: oral sex, vaginal sex, anal sex. And I'm sorry if that language upsets someone. And there was a 5-word description of each. Is that teaching young people about those types of sex acts, or is it letting them know what the words are in case some boy or some girl tries to do that to them? I don't know. just for perspective, my son is in third year, and in the SPHE class, they get to catch up on homework. I asked him what he's learned in SPHE so far, and it's basically the birds and the bees and where babies come from. Maybe that's the truth as well, I don't know. Please, people, your children are discussing all these topics regarding sex. Would it not be better your children get the truth? I might have been more mature in my teenage years if I'd got the nuts and bolts. Geez, I've been hearing for weeks this was all a conspiracy theory. It's not a conspiracy theory. We're talking about RSE, relationships. Why are we not dealing with the subject of relationships? We need to know about relationships and how to get on in life, not just talk about sex. It's not just romantic relationships that we need to be teaching either. And on it goes. So many of you. We'll get to those loads of your nominations for Donegal Person of the Year for a bit of fun. You have to go to the actual website to vote in that. But listen, we'll catch up on all those comments and much more besides tomorrow. We're broadcasting live from the Radisson. If you're down there, come over and say hello. But for me and the team, enjoy your Tuesday. Chat to you tomorrow morning from 9.